It's time for Senior Talk with Carol Higgins Taylor, a show designed with seniors in mind. Carol discusses everything from Social Security to senior housing, medication to Medicare, and so much more. And now, your award-winning host, Carol Higgins Taylor.
Hi, and thank you for joining me today for this edition of Senior Talk. We're going to be discussing caregiving, and caregiving can often creep up on you. You start by dropping by your mother's house, doing your laundry, or taking your dad to a doctor's appointment. And then maybe you start doing grocery shopping and refilling prescriptions. And gradually, more and more, at some point you realize that you've made a real commitment to taking care of someone else. Sometimes it's triggered by a major health event, such as a stroke or heart attack or accident. And sometimes it's memory loss. Life as you know it can stop when you put all of your energy into caring for a loved one. And caregiving can become a new career, and you have to adjust to that new normal. My guests today are here to help you do that if you're going through caregiving. Jane Margeson, Communications Director for AARP Maine. And if you log on to aarp.org, you will find, and just type in the search engine, caregiving, there is a lot of information there. And Juanita Taylor, from Juanita Taylor Consulting, LLC. She does elder care resource navigating, among a variety of other things. All elders all the time. Thank you both so much. Jane's on the phone. Juanita's in studio. Thank you so much for being here. I really appreciate it.
Thank you.
I know the three of us have done caregiving of various degrees, the two of you more significantly than I have for parents who have ultimately passed away. And so you have a wealth of experience on what it means to be a caregiver and what it is and what it isn't. Juanita, I'm going to start with you. Oftentimes, caregivers don't classify themselves as caregivers, and they're just doing whatever they do out of love. What are some of the common things that caregivers do that would signify them as a caregiver?
Well, initially, Carol, when my mom was diagnosed with emphysema, she was not able to do things as she had done in the past, so I had her move in with me. And what that meant was that I really was responsible for doing the groceries, doing the house cleaning, cooking meals, and prepping food ahead for her because I was still working 40 or 50 hours a week. And she was not able a lot of days to get her lunch. She could feed herself as long as things were prepared. But I had to make all the doctor's appointment and transport her because she didn't drive. And so you kind of have to be an advocate because a lot of times elderly don't always get what the doctor's saying, and they're certainly not going to ask a lot of questions. At least my mother never did. And so I'd arrange all that. I would always talk to the doctors and ask questions about treatment because she had to have breathing treatments. I was a POA, so I handled all the finances. And, you know, you're an unpaid companion and you're an unpaid aide 24 hours a day, whether you work or not. And that certainly was my case. She was able to dress herself and take a shower, but she did need help with her medications. And she certainly didn't understand the world of medical. And that was a really difficult task to navigate with her.
And that was your role, is to keep her going, as it were, because all of these things that you mentioned were things that she just can't do on her own.
Exactly. She couldn't even do laundry. I had to make sure the laundry was done and things were accessible for her and that she could get around the house safely. And there's so many things you don't think of until you're faced with that.
Well, and that's a really good point. And so, Jane, I want to come to you. If someone's starting to find themselves in that role, and they're still hesitant to identify themselves as a caregiver, but they realize that they're doing all the things that Juanita just described, and at some point, you have to admit the inevitable. What's the first thing they should do? Do you start that conversation with your loved one?
Well, and that can be very tricky, and that's an excellent point to bring up, Carol. And really one of the things that I think is difficult about this entire situation is that even though you may look back and say, oh, you know, I was seeing that she was slowing down a bit, or, you know, her eating habits seem to have changed, or, you know, just little clues that something was going on, when you actually kind of step into that role of a caregiver, it'll feel as though you've just been hit by a ton of bricks and, you know, your life has just changed and you can easily feel very overwhelmed. And I've also talked to people who tell me that they felt very foolish because they felt they should have been more prepared and more aware of what was happening. But, you know, so I would say step number one, please don't blame yourself. We all miss clues. It's very difficult. And sometimes, quite frankly, we don't want to see the things that are happening because it's hard. And some of it can be quite sad. But it can also be a time of incredible bonding with your loved one. And that was definitely my experience with my mother-in-law. But, you know, just starting the conversation, that alone is a very, very important step. And I would say just quick tips here. Don't try to bring up the topic of, let's say you want to try and introduce the idea of having a home health aide for 1 hour a day, or, you know, maybe you're going to change things a little bit with the schedule with your loved one. What we call look for an opening. Don't try to just bring it up out of the blue and point to something that, you know, you think will be helpful and sort of startle your loved one into realizing that there may be some changes ahead. But just try and introduce something. Like you could say, you know, you mentioned that your eyes are bothering you. Is this causing some problems with reading? Maybe we could take another look at your prescription and that might be helpful. I mean, just that little thing introduces you as a helpful person who's looking at a situation and trying to make things better for your loved one.
And it sounds very non-threatening.
Exactly. Exactly.
Because I think, from my experience, that sometimes if this isn't approached correctly, the senior may feel like the very next step is going into the home. Because if you mention memory loss or you can't take care of yourself, that they can shut down. That conversation has to be very respectful and very delicate, especially if something is going on.
That's exactly right. And you may, if you come at it a little bit too quickly or forcefully, you may end up finding that your loved one just kind of digs their heels in and says, heck no, I don't want to have anybody in my home. You know, I don't want new prescriptions. I don't want anything. And then, you know, you've got a trust issue now where they don't even want to try baby steps of what might be possible to help them remain in their home, you know, for as long as they can. So that's exactly right. You want to build the trust. Start a little bit slowly, and I think you'll find that as you build successes, like, you know, a successful change of a prescription, now the person can read better, now you could say, well, that went well. Now let's take a look at, you know, the next thing, whatever that might be.
Do you advise people to kind of make a written plan, even with other people? I know it's very difficult for us to ask for help. We're stoic Mainers. I don't need help. I can handle this on my own. Asking for help can be seen as a sign of weakness. It isn't, but that's sort of the perception. I know my mother won't take help no matter what. So do you advise making a plan and developing a team around you and talking maybe to siblings
definitely.
Or others?
Definitely. And you're so right. It does not need to be a sign of weakness at all. In fact, it's a sign of great strength, I think. And as friends, as family members, we want to help each other, don't we? I mean, that's what we're here for. That's what friendship and love is all about. And if, you know, if you can reach out to your best friend, even if it's a phone call, even if it isn't somebody who's right there next door, but maybe they're halfway across the country, but they become a touchstone for you. And you can call them and say, I'm having such a hard day and I don't know what to do. And that alone can be tremendously helpful. But close at home, where you may need people to help get groceries or help with getting your loved one to a medical appointment. There are actually quite a few resources available close by usually, and the more you build a team around you, the more those types of tasks are going to become manageable.
I think that team approach is really key because caregiver burnout is significant, and this not asking for help can really be a recipe for disaster if if someone's in it 24/7 and they're just exhausted.
Right.
And you must have gone through this yourself.
I'm sorry. I apologize.
Not at all. You must have gone through this yourself as you were caring for your mother-in-law, that exhaustion creeps in with your spouse.
Yes, and that is exactly right. And the caregiver burnout, let me tell you, is a very, very real thing. And I was working full-time at a pretty demanding job. As you know, I work for AARP. Mm-hmm. And one of the most important things that I did was I sat down with my boss and I said, here's what's going on. We're seeing some real changes at home. We need to make some adjustments. I'm going to be dealing with a lot of new medical appointments, et cetera. My mother-in-law at this point was in her late 80s, and we found, at least with our situation, that the changes that started to happen with her, while they started slowly at first, then they escalated. And it kind of felt like every other day there was something new, there was something else to deal with. And having that conversation with her made all the difference, because then we could make a plan that made sense for my office and my team at the office, but made sense for me as a caregiver back at home. So, for example, I was allowed to work at home 2 days a week. That was tremendously helpful, because then I could work around all those medical appointments or phone calls or whatever, and I could give my partner a break as well, on those days that I was at home. So I definitely think sit down with your employer, have that conversation, and try to make a plan together that makes sense for you both.
When we come back, we're going to talk more with Jane and Juanita about caregiving. So stay with us. There's much more to come. Hi, we're back with Senior Talk. Jane Margeson, Juanita Taylor, talking about caregiving and all that that entails, whether you're new at it or you've been doing it for a while. When we left, Jane was talking about talking with her employer. Jane, you're very lucky. AARP, of course, obviously being AARP, they get it. But it's becoming more and more prevalent that people are needing to take time off from work to become caregivers. So do you recommend right off the bat going to an employer and saying, this is my situation?
Well, it's, you know, different situations, of course, will be apparent during this kind of time with a loved one in caregiving. And I wouldn't say, I mean, I think every situation could be a little bit different with an employer, but I think just having the conversation, offering that opportunity for a collaborative effort to find a solution that makes sense will be helpful to everyone. Because if your employer is unaware that you're experiencing this kind of situation at home, and all of a sudden, you know, you're coming in a little late or having to leave early, or there are lots of doctor's appointments that, you know, so now it's, you're stressing out the rest of your work team, then that can turn into a different kind of situation. So I'm always for talking. I think that's just my policy in general, but I think in this situation, I just think let's give ourselves the very best chance for success.
Juanita, when you're caring for a loved one, there are some specific things that you should do. For instance, advocating for yourself, keeping the home safe, staying organized. Can you elaborate? Let's start at the top, advocating for yourself.
Well, I think that's imperative. And I think Jane alluded to this in her conversation that, you know, you can't be perfect. And don't worry, because even if you're not perfect, you're still doing a very important job. But you have to let the doctors and the people in the medical field know that you are the caregiver, that you're working full time, that you are responsible for the care of that person. And in my case, I was the only one. My brothers lived away. So it basically was me and a few key friends that really stepped in to make sure that I had the tools that I needed.
Well, if you tell your physician, so you're going to probably have to sign, either have a POA or you will have to, your loved one will have to sign a release that the doctor may talk to you. And then will they provide you training? What if you have to do an injection, say an insulin pen, or change a dressing?
I didn't have to do any of that, but I know the training and the help is available because so many people do need injections. And there are times you can bring skilled nursing in to do those things because it is covered under Medicare. So there's several ways you can approach that.
And how about keeping the home safe? We all know that, I mean, I know in my case I have stuff everywhere, but their tripping hazards can be pretty serious.
That's right, and especially we had a lot of carpet, but we had throw rugs, and we had to eliminate all of them. There had to be a grab bar installed in the bathroom, and we got a shower seat for her. I did everything I could to make sure that she could get from the bathroom to the kitchen to her bedroom in the living room. We moved her downstairs, so she was all on one floor, so she didn't have to access stairs. And you just try to think of everything in advance of what could be a danger.
One of the other things
I would say too, just on that point, and that's exactly what we did, Juanita. We kind of had this checklist of, okay, we need grab bars, we need, you know, wall-to-wall carpeting and lighting that makes sense. But I will say this, as things changed, many of the things that we had put into place that worked perfectly at first didn't later on. A couple of examples, the lighting situation, we did have to adjust because my mother-in-law's eyes were changing. Her vision was changing, going from, you know, the where she lived in her little apartment outside into bright sunshine could actually create a bit of a hazard just going from those different light situations. So that's something to keep in mind. And then the other thing was we had picked out one, in fact, she picked it out, this really nice carpeting for her entire apartment. But as she got older and had to take more medications too, she often got quite dizzy. And she would say that the carpet itself made her eyes feel swimmy. That was the word she used. So we had to make some adjustments even so along the way. And that's okay. That happens. And it's just something I think that you might expect to deal with as a caregiver.
And I was thinking of the lighting, too, in having indoor sensor lights, that motion sensor light, so they don't have to remember to either turn it on or find the switch that you can. I think there is some that you just plug right into the wall, and as you walk around, they just pop on.
Right. There are many different options for good, safe lighting. There are even light bulbs that if the lights go out, for example, that when you take the light bulb out of the lamp, it turns into a flashlight. I mean, there are all kinds of things.
I love that.
Yeah.
I'd never heard of such a thing.
Yeah, they're super. There are many different things, and one size isn't going to fit all. So take a look. There's a lot out there that's available. And many communities have what are called medical loan closets. It's almost like a lending library of medical equipment, from shower seats to, you know, grab bars and diapers and Johnnies and all kinds of stuff that if you need something, a walker or a wheelchair, likely in your community or nearby, there's a place that will lend that equipment to you for as long as you need it, and then you just return it, and it doesn't cost you a penny.
That is very helpful. And you can,
they're great.
Maybe a physician or someone who's helping would know about these resources in the community.
Yes, definitely. And I mean, when my mother-in-law passed away, we even donated her power scooter. I mean, those are, you know, retail for thousands of dollars, and we wanted to, you know, give it to the next person who needed it. So you never know what you'll find. Sometimes you can find some really high-end equipment as well.
The information that you both have from being caregivers and being professionals, I think, is very helpful to people. Staying organized, how important is that, Juanita?
It's critical because everyone generally is working full-time. You're juggling that schedule along with usually multiple appointments during the month for medical or transportation or other things. Occasionally, my mom would just want to get out and go for a ride. So there was that, too. You had to make sure you had all the time available. And it's really critical.
That's really important, too. And keeping track of your emergency numbers, medical appointments, health records in a folder can keep all of that caregiving in one place. And even information that you get offline maybe from AARP tips and tricks can be helpful. There is more to come. We're going to tell you how you can take care of yourself when you're in the throes of caregiving. Even though it may seem like just one more thing to do, it's very important. Stay with us. We will be right back right after this. Hi, we're back with Senior Talk. When we left, we were talking about being organized, staying organized, keeping track of things. And Jane, during the break, you mentioned something I'd actually forgotten about, the CARE Act, which is really critical for caregivers. Tell me about that.
Yes, the CARE Act is a law in the state of Maine. It was passed in 2015, and it makes sure that caregivers are recognized when their loved ones go into the hospital and as they transition back home. What it does is it requires hospitals to record the name of the patient's designated family caregiver upon admission and then keeps that caregiver informed of the loved one's discharge plan so it doesn't all come as a surprise to you. And then further, it provides some education and instruction for aftercare tasks such as medication management, injections, wound care, that kind of thing that the family caregiver may need to address once the loved one returns home.
Can people find out more about the CARE Act if they log on to www.aarp.org? Is information on there?
Yes, it's all part of, if you go to the AARP Resource Center, and I think you gave that information before, aarp.org/caregiving,
yep.
There's a wealth of information there. And then you can come to our website as well at aarp.org/ME.
So last thing you want is if your loved one is in the hospital and you are the caregiver that you don't have the proper paperwork and they're not going to tell you anything. And Juanita, so thank you, Jane, for that. Taking care of yourself. I've heard this when I was at an area agency on aging and I would talk to caregivers, and this whole self-care, it's just one more thing to do and they don't have time for that. But it's critical. So talk to me about caring for yourself, why it's important, what people can do.
Well, as a consultant, I have caregivers that come to me and are looking for advice. And the three big topics I tell them is you have to eat right. You can't snack and depend on alcohol. You've got to have good nutrition to keep your strength up. You must exercise and you must get enough sleep. Otherwise, if you don't take care of yourself, you're not going to be there for your loved one. And another piece of advice I give them is always to learn about the disease that their loved one might have. The more you know, the better armed you are, the better prepared you are. And again, you're not going to be perfect, and that's okay. Just set some realistic expectations for yourself. And that way you can just keep going day after day, because there are days you feel like you're on a treadmill.
If you are, that's a really good point about learning about the disease. If you are caregiving for someone with Alzheimer's, log on to, what's the Alzheimer's? Alzheimer's.org?
Yes.
Alzheimer's.org, a wealth of information there, because that is a whole other level of caregiving. And so you want to do that. Also, some of the other things that we had talked about was identifying your own coping skills, learning, wouldn't you say, understanding what you actually are capable of and are not capable of, so to get the help for the things that maybe you can't do.
Absolutely. You have to learn what button pushes your stress level. And if you can't do it all, you know, there's Meals for Me, there's 3D catering, there's all kinds of things out there. If you're not a cook, you can get help with that. But I think, as you said, Carol, it's recognizing what you're good at and what you're not and filling in.
Jane Margeson, AARP, Juanita Taylor, Juanita Taylor Consulting. Thank you so much for being here today to discuss this really important topic. We haven't discussed caregiving in a while, and I know there are people struggling with this. I hope this was informative to you all. Thank you so much for listening. That's it for me. This is Senior Talk.